It's a show about women, for women, and empowering women. This is Cocktails and Conversation with Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Maureen Moore here on Cocktails and Conversation on 590 The Fan. You know, you can catch me always on podcasts and catch me streaming anytime when it works best for you, in the shower or bike riding or taking a walk with your dog. Today, I'm very fortunate because I have Dear Duck, Kirsty McDonald. Now, I wish I had a wonderful Australian accident. But it's not. Jim, clear that. Kirsty McDonald, a wonderful Australian with an accent to kill all accents. Kirsty is a communications executive. She's worked on three continents, everything from GQ magazine to Ernst & Young in Asia to Peabody Energy here right in St. Louis in Australia. And you know what? I'm going to let her go through it. But what I have to tell you is I am bowled over all the time and humbled by Kirsty's talent, by her grace, and by her knowledge. So without further ado, welcoming you to Cocktails and Communications, Dear Duck, Kirsty McDonald.
Oh, so thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, you know, not only was I excited that you were going to be here today, but then, you know, Mike Moore was like, give her a big hug and a kiss for me and tell her I got to see her right away.
I know. It's been way too long, and I'm thrilled and surprised and blown away to be here, and that was... Wow, that was a pretty fantastic introduction. I don't know that I can live up to that, but I will try.
Oh, my gosh. What are you telling? You know, you definitely are. And, you know, and Annie, I mean, life would not be the same if Annie didn't get to come and see you today. So, you know, this is great. So tell us. Okay, this is a treasure. It's a huge amount of history that we're going to cover because, you know, it's been your young life, but it's been a very, very, very idyllic life as far as everything you've accomplished. Three continents. I mean, just think of what you've done in this world and in your lifetime so far. And you're a baby. I mean, I think I still have purses older than you.
Oh, man, I'm feeling my age at the moment. I just I hit my mid-40s this week. So I'm like, Where's the time going? But I look back on my career, which truly has been a series of happy accidents. It really has. I've just had opportunities.
Isn't that wild?
It is. It really is.
Because you live right.
Well, I think you bring the right people into your life by the way that you interact with the world. I really do believe that. And in the spirit of generosity, I've always worked hard to go above and beyond in any job that I'm in. And I think people have taken a chance on me, truly, which, you know, now that I am mid-career and I'm pretty serious about mentoring young women, I try always to remember that. Just give somebody the chance. You know, let them fail or let them flourish.
Right.
Give somebody the chance, because that's really how my career came to me, was somebody... progressively, different people at different points in my career, maybe just seeing a little bit more of me than I did at the time and saying, you know what, how about you give this a go? And I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm ready for that. And then the next thing, you're doing it. You know, it's that kind of sink or swim thing. So, I've had what is now a fairly long career, more than 20 years, which is crazy. And I've done lots of different things in lots of different industries, but it's always been communication. And I think it's the cool thing about having a discipline like communications or accountancy, even, where you are providing a service, you can dip into any industry. You can, you know, you don't have to be the subject matter expert.
Oh, yeah.
You can be in mining. You can be in healthcare. You can be in publishing. And you're bringing your toolkit and applying it to something new every time. So 2 decades in, I still love what I do. It's still fresh. I'm still learning. And I've just been incredibly fortunate.
So, you know, I'm thinking... You started out, you started out behind the mic. You did internship, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Behind the mic.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Crazy hours. So I started out in Australia. I was studying journalism.
Mm-hmm.
and tending bar. So a couple of high school girlfriends and I were all studying journalism, and they were studying PR at the same university. And they were hiring bartenders at one of our favourite pubs. It was called the Ship Inn. And so we worked busy sort of Friday, Saturday nights, and, you know, the graveyard shift. Everybody would leave at 4 o'clock in the morning. There were no closing hours at that point in that pub. So people were leaving as the sun came up. So it was long work and it was hard work.
Yeah.
But one of the local radio stations had their Christmas party at the Ship Inn and had hired a function room. And I didn't realize that that's what it was. I knew I was working a Christmas party. And I was having a chat to this lovely gentleman and his wife. And later on in the evening, he was like, you don't seem to be a full-time bartender. You know, are you in school? And I said, yeah, I am in school for journalism. He was like, well, I'm the news director at one of the local radio stations. He said, would you be interested in an internship? And I said, well, yeah. And he said, well, be at the station at 3:45 on Monday morning, a.m., and we'll see what we can figure out. So I did. And that was the beginning of my career, really. It was just, you know, I was just so excited to be there.
Okay, so you're excited to be there. You're an intern.
Yeah.
Did that mean that he stuck you right on the radio right away and said, here, you've got your own radio show and we'll give you tidbits here and there? What did they have you do as an intern?
I made a lot of coffee.
You made a lot of coffee? Okay.
I would, you know, at that point, monitor the news. So local news, and Australia is such a huge country. So you've got these national news networks, AM news. So it's like news talk radio. Whether you're in Perth or Sydney or Brisbane, you're getting the same half-hourly news. And radio is an incredible medium because people still have to get in their cars and drive. So you have this huge audience, this national audience of people all trying to get to work at the same time in the morning, and they're on the highway and they're listening to it's not as fragmented as television is.
Right.
Still. Because you want to get the news, you want to get the weather, you want to get the traffic report. So people are binge watching Netflix or watching Hulu. They choose the time, but you have a captive audience in the morning.
Right. That's exactly right.
One time of people sitting in their cars. So it was a pretty big network. And we were the Brisbane Bureau. And so I got to do a little bit of writing. And then about 3 weeks in, he did say to me at 5 a.m., you know, come on into the booth. And I was sitting next to him. And he handed me the bulletin to read.
Wow, cool.
It was so cool. But I was so nervous that I got it through a 5-minute bulletin in 2 minutes. We had
3 minutes of dead air to play with.
We had to play music. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Oh gosh.
It's 5 o'clock. It's 4 BC. I'm Kirsten Mitchell. And it was like calling a race, like and out. And I'm looking at the clock, and he's looking at the clock, and I'm like, oh God.
God, now what am I going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
So then was it back to getting coffee and fetching lunch for everybody?
Yeah,
and,
I occasionally got to do a story, but it was back to getting coffee and fetching lunch. But then out of that, I got a part-time gig with the police service in Queensland. They had a police media unit, and they were looking for an assistant to do sort of part-time work supporting their new head of police media. And John Knox, who this wonderful news director, who's legendary in Brisbane, he just shaped the careers of so many people. He said to me, you know what, this guy's looking for people at the moment, and that would be the best the best experience.
Right.
Because once you go out and you're looking for a job in journalism, you're going to have all the police contacts.
Yeah.
Like you are going to know every policeman in the state who could possibly, like, if you want to cover the police beat ever, this is the job for you. Like, you cannot go wrong. Maybe you want to work in media out of this. Maybe you want to go back into journalism. It's just, it's going to be the best grounding. And again, it was at the crack of dawn. I kept getting these jobs that started at like 5 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
So I would come in and overnight, all of the reports from all these tiny stations, and Queensland's a bit like Texas.
Okay.
So all of these one-man police stations would send in their report, and it was like the telex, you know, the sort of dot matrix printer.
Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah.
So they would print out overnight what had happened. It was like yards and yards of paper. So, you know, domestic dispute in Mount Isa or, a hit and run in Moranbah. And so my job was to come in and sort of pick it all up off the floor and then summarize it into sort of a morning media report and send it out to the news stations and to the police media contacts. So that was my job. But I got to do incredibly, incredibly cool stuff. I got to go on occasionally there was a siege and I'd get to mm-hmm. go, you know, to that.
And were you still going to college at this
time? I was. And I was still working at the Ship Inn. So
Wait, when did you sleep? Is that what you're trying to do now, is at least get 5 hours of sleep
I managed to survive on not very much sleep at all. I learned more out of that internship and that 2 years that I worked as an assistant than I ever did in any other period of my career, truly.
I've always said that, you know, interns, if you've got an intern that's willing to kind of come in and roll their sleeves up and be part of your team and do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
What they don't understand is they've got to look at that big picture and realize that with the big picture, they're going to get opportunities. And if, you know, it's really just because you're there, if they're underfoot, they're always doing, you just tend to go, here, go do this now. Here, go do that. And all of a sudden, they're collecting more information. They're broadening what they're learning. And all of a sudden, they become very, very useful, instrumental, and almost to the point where you can't do without them. And pretty soon, you start giving them responsibilities, and they all of a sudden end up with their own little job title way beyond what you thought they were going to do.
Right. Or what you even thought you could do.
Yeah.
And it really opened my eyes to, you know, I was studying journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a kind of curious experience working for the police, because mm-hmm. in journalism, you're desperate to get all the facts. You know, you're trying, you're calling people and you're asking the questions. And if you're working on the police side, they know all the facts.
Mm-hmm.
They've been at the crime scene, or they've been at the accident, or they've been at the, you know, oil spill, or whatever it is. They know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you condense it down into what you can release, you know, because anything that happens is going to go to trial. So it's not an offender, it's an alleged offender.
Yes,
it's not
right.
a car crash, it's two cars collided. So you have to be very careful about allotting blame. And
mm-hmm.
so that was really important. I had learned that obviously in journalism school, but just playing that tape all the way through. If we issue this, if we say this, if we release this message,
mm-hmm.
Could it affect the outcome down the track? That now, in the age of 140 characters, tweet it,
mm-hmm.
tweet first, think later, ready, fire, aim, was such a gift for a young communicator to write something and have my boss come back and say, we can't say this because, you know, to really play the tape all the way through. So again, it was just this incredible grounding that eventually a cadetship did come up in radio. And I did get a job in local radio for a national network, not with 4KQ, not with the first place that I'd interned. But I got a cadetship and got graded as a journalist. And radio journalism was my first gig.
See, and you know what? You are, because you are a journalist first.
Yeah.
And a communications specialist now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because really, you're a communications executive, but it's because you are a journalist and you learned from the ground up. You know, the one thing I always say about people, especially everybody that's in communications and people that are having to put out fires in different corporations and dealing with, you know, the press and the public and the, you know, I mean, whatever is going to hit the stockholders later and everything,
right.
you know, that you have to look at, you can't just take one person's word. You can't just take
right.
one person's, you know, seven or eight lines of this is exactly what happened. You have to still get all sides of the story. You have to talk to other people
yeah.
because you can't just take one version, because one version usually does not tell the whole story.
Right.
Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, too, that you really, you know, when you're in journalism and especially in radio,
mm-hmm.
There's the top of the hour and the half hour. So
right.
you've got a bulletin at 12 and a bulletin at 12:30 and another one at 1, which gives you 5 minutes to read the news and 25 minutes to gather the news, write it up, and get back in the booth again. And it was a tiny radio station, so there were only a couple of us.
Mm-hmm.
Weekends were solo shifts, so you were doing it all by yourself.
Oh, my gosh. And trying to get it up on the
right.
get it up on the news
yep.
and time and
yep.
everything.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So
working the board and everything?
Working the board
oh,
and
my Lord.
Everything. So it was the best grounding. But you also... You in that paradigm, it's all about the product, the product, the product. If you're working for a police media,
mm-hmm.
Or I eventually, you know, crossed to the dark side of PR, you are segmenting out your audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about big corporations. Something happens. You know, let's call it event A. What it's my job to do is to say, okay, well, if these are the absolute facts, this happened. How does that play out for How am I going to hear that or see that or perceive that if I am living in the local community, if I'm a shareholder, if I'm a journalist, if I'm a financial journalist,
correct,
if I'm an employee, if I'm a competitor? So you really have to have that map of who are your stakeholders, because... you know this having kids, right? They can come home and tell you something cool that they did and you can sort of clutch your heart and think, oh my God, that sounds very dangerous. And their friends will be like, cool, man. You know,
yeah,
really. Like it's all in who your audience is. Like, you know, I jumped traffic on my skateboard today.
Well,
oh my God. Right?
Yeah.
So people, different audiences perceive the same news very, very differently.
Well, you know, or you come home, you have kids come home and they say, oh, yeah, great. School was great. Everything was fine. And then you get a call from school and they're like, you know, school, well, so-and-so was great, but this is what happened. And you go, these are two totally different stories coming from two different people, you know, and you're going, okay, the one, I love you. You're my child. I love you and I will do anything to protect you. However, what I'm hearing on the other side is this is what I'm hearing happened.
Right.
Now, fill me in and give me all the rest of it. You know, give me who was it? Paul Harvey. Give me the rest of the story.
Give me the rest of the story.
Give me the rest of the story. Exactly. And then there's probably somewhere in between because then there's other perceptions and other things that were that took place, you know, that kind of got left out.
Yep.
You know, so I know it's funny, you know, and you just you look at it for you as a journalist.
Yeah.
And through your eyes and everything you've seen. And I mean, luckily I've been privy to some of it over the years as we've been colleagues. So that it's been wonderful. I mean, as far as knowing that you are probably one of the hardest working people I know.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh my gosh.
You give me a pretty good run for my money, Mo. I've got to say.
I just remember all those nights that that you were still in your, okay, granted, I was there, but I think I had more fun than you had sometimes because you had to make sure that every word, you know, was chosen to be the specific word to give you that that perception with everyone. You
know? And that version control, too. I mean, if you're working for a company, and I have been so fortunate to work for amazing companies with phenomenal executive teams and amazing leaders, where there's a version control. And so a version of that sort of 17 different stories will be you'll write a sentence, the cat sat on the mat. And someone, you'll give it to five different people and say, could you just check this over for me and let me know what you think, you know? And someone will come back with, you know, the feline sat on the rectangular object. And it's the same thing, but it's their flavor. And you're like, okay.
Okay.
You know, someone will, you know, write back the tabby cat sat on the, you know, shaggy mat. And it's like, okay, you've added your flourish. Mm-hmm. So you then have to try and be respectful of the fact that you've asked people for their time and attention, but also do what you do, which is try and
come back
it down.
The cat's on the mat.
The cat's out on the mat is what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Like, thank you for your feedback. But sometimes it will be a subject matter expert that says, you know, I work with an investor audience and we probably want to include this nugget because they'll be interested in that or and so forth. So so it is. You do – there's a – if you go into communications in this day and age really just because you like to write, you better find something very specific like social media where you really can just craft that message. Because if you're working in generalist PR, managing your internal stakeholders where you have to take that on board and understand that people, you know, are very invested in shaping that message, there's a lot of people management involved. A lot of people management. So you may go through, I think once I got up to 49 versions of a 2-paragraph release and you're like, well, here we go.
And you still have your hair.
You haven't pulled your hair out from all of it. Not all of it. Yeah.
I know.
It came back. You saw me without it for a while.
I saw you without it for a while. Yes, that's right.
There you go.
And not because of that. Not because of, you know, pulling your hair out because of work.
Man.
Well, this is Maureen Moore, and I'm here today with Kirsty McDonald, and she is queen of the written word and of perception and of, you know, really being a first-class journalist. But we are here today on Cocktails and Conversation, and we'll be back in a few minutes. So raise your glass if you are not in all the right ways on the underdogs. We will never be anything but loud and nitty gritty. We now return to Cocktails and Conversation with Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. So this is Maureen Moore. Welcome back. I'm here on 590 The Fan. And I'm here today with Kirsty McDonald, a dear, dear friend. And Kirsty is a communications executive who's worked on three continents. You know, she's had gigs with GQ, you know, GQ magazine, my goodness, you know, all the way to Ernst & Young, you know, in Asia and, you know, Peabody Energy here in St. Louis. But she's worked all over the map, all over the world. And she is quintessentially the best journalist I know. I mean, because she's fair, she's correct, she's concise, and at the same time, you know, she doesn't beat anybody over the head with words. So I want to say this is Kirsty McDonald back here on 590 on Cocktails and Conversation. So I used some words there. So welcome back, kid.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just so happy to be here.
This is great. This is great. You know, well, and the thing is, folks, I should tell you, you know, Kirsty and I are longtime friends and we've been colleagues and, you know, just shared a lot of different things in life over the years. Everything from traveling with us to Keeneland. Was it Keeneland when you went with us for horse racing?
Keeneland.
Yeah. And
it was like nothing I'd ever seen.
And spending time with us in our home when Kirst had some medical issues that we're proud to say she's back and better than ever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and when we adopted Annie and brought Annie into the house, you know, I mean, so, you know, she's just been part of my life and my husband's life, Mike Moore. So it's nice to have a family friend here today. But, you know, I want to highlight Kirst. Tell me, okay, so you're at GQ magazine. So first of all, did you get to see a lot of the models all the time?
Got to see a lot of the models. Well, yeah. The thing with GQ, I mean, they had male models, but they also, at that point, were doing a lot of sort of that Men of the Year stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any experience working in celebrity PR. And at that time, they wanted to do more news. So I had been working at Newsweek magazine as a publicist.
Right.
And got this job with GQ. And I think it was week two, they were shooting the Men of the Year cover. And at the time, The Sopranos was the hottest show on television. And James Gandolfini just went lumbering down the corridor in a bathrobe for the photo shoot.
I'm sorry, but yeah, it doesn't sound like that's that like the great sexy one that I could think of all the people at GQ.
He was no Brad Pitt, but it was a sort of a, I was like, oh, that's what this job is going to be. Just don't know when Tony Soprano is going to be sort of past of, you know, on a given afternoon. So so that was wild. But yeah, I guess I have an Australian accent, but it's a little bit of a it's a bit of a ruse. And you've met my dad. I'm actually from a very Scottish family and was born in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in Asia. My dad took a job as an architect in Asia in the late 70s in Hong Kong. And then we emigrated to Australia when I was 15 years old. So I started as a journalist in Australia and then in 1998 went to visit a dear, dear friend who was doing an internship with Hill & Knowlton, the PR firm in New York.
Oh, that's how. Okay.
Completely fell in love with New York. I don't know. There's something about America where the whole rest of the planet is raised on America. Be it NYPD Blue or LA Law or what have you, we, through television and through the news, especially for kids who grew up, I guess, in the 70s and 80s, so much pop culture was coming out of the US and was being distributed globally that everybody felt like they kind of owned a little bit of America.
I know what you're saying because, you know, Mike and I, we were in Ireland a few years ago at the Curragh for the Irish Derby, which is similar to the Kentucky Derby, minus about, you know, the Curragh, I think, has about 30,000 people at it and places packed. And it's, you know, it's just as crazy compared to 250,000 here at, you know, I guess about 140,000 at the Derby. But, you know, the wild thing is we're at the Curragh. Mike Moore has his signature cowboy hat on all the time. And we're walking through and everybody's dressed to the nines with the hats and the whole nine yards. And because this was like 2014 or 2015, I can't tell you how many people because he had a cowboy hat on. There was only one other gentleman at the whole Curragh that had a cowboy hat on. But I had more people coming up to me. And Mike's, you know, I have to say, Mike Moore is good looking. You know, he's an Adonis. He's so good looking.
He's a good looking man.
And I had more people coming up going, is that JR?
Right.
Is that JR?
Yeah.
Because they had all been watching, you know, the old, what was that, Dallas.
Yeah.
That was Dallas. And people are watching
the... He walked off the set of Dallas.
He did.
And the whole planet watched Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I still have my I Shot JR badge.
Isn't that wild?
My grandmother got it for me, I think, for like my 8th birthday. Mm-hmm. I Shot JR, which was my proudest possession. I've still got it. But yeah, we did. We watched those shows. And you sort of got this sense of ownership over the US.
Right.
So I arrived in 1998 to visit my friend who was working in New York and, you know, had not been to the US and touched down and had this weird sense immediately of feeling at home that I've never lost. And we did emigrate from Hong Kong to Australia when I was 15.
What are you considered as far as a citizen?
So I've got a UK citizenship.
Okay.
I've got a UK passport because I'm still a British citizen by mm-hmm. birth.
Right.
And then we emigrated to Australia, so I took out Australian citizenship.
Okay.
And I do not have a green card here. I'm here on a working visa. So I'm an alien. I know.
Prettiest one I know.
I'm an alien. I'm a legal alien, as Sting says. So, yeah. So, but the weirdest thing happened in that I had this immediate sense of being at home and thought, well, you know, Sal got an internship.
Such familiarity.
Yeah, maybe I could get an internship mm-hmm. too. So she went off about 6 months later to teach at an Outward Bound school in Costa Rica. She was incredibly adventurous, and off she went. And I had got a job. So at that point, I was like, well, here I am now. You know, I better make some friends. And I did, and I had the time of my life in New York. I did 2 stints in New York and then went back to Australia and figured, you know, I'm done with that now. I love the U.S., but, you know, mm-hmm. my family's in Australia. My mother wasn't
Your
very
mom?
Well.
Yes.
Yep. So here I am. And I took a contract with a company that offered me a full-time job, and they were eventually acquired by Peabody Energy.
Well, when were you with Ernst & Young?
Oh, Ernst & Young was 2016. So that was actually a couple of years ago. I finally went back to Hong Kong.
That was, okay. Yeah. I was trying to think when you were there with Ernst & Young.
Yeah.
So that was in Asia. Okay.
That was in Asia.
So that was after Peabody.
After Peabody, yeah. So I was offered the opportunity to come here after Peabody bought the company I was working for. They said, would you like to come? And I thought I was going to get laid off because they bought my little company, littler company.
MacArthur
Cole,
Yep, MacArthur.
And they had a terrific team in Australia at that time already doing their communications. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, actually MacArthur said to me, we've got a list of people in duplicate jobs who may be at risk. And we think that you're probably on that list. They've got a terrific communications team. So just brace yourself. And it actually went the other way. I was offered a job here in St. Louis because I'd already worked in the US and I understood Australian media. And I understood, you know, I had worked in the U.S. in publishing. Mm-hmm. So I had this kind of weird mishmash of the right kind of experience. And it just, I immediately said yes. I had just bought a house in Australia, literally. 6 weeks prior, I had closed on this house. And I just sort of, you know, tossed the keys to a house sitter and left. I was like, yep.
I'm here. I'm on my way. Like, I'm here.
Like, America, jeez. I just cannot quit you. And I arrived in St. Louis and again, hadn't even contemplated. I was like, you know, I will be close enough to visit my friends in New York. It's back in the US again. I know it's going to be an interesting job. I know these are terrific people that I'm going to be working with. I'll learn a lot. St. Louis, Schmaint Louis, you know, whatever. And then I arrived and I didn't go anywhere for 2 years. I just explored St. Louis. I was like, what is this?
Well, it took you, let's see. How long did it take you to learn how to drive?
Oh, my God.
I remember that commotion.
You know what? There is still some discussion of, about how well that took. My driving is still horrible. That left-hand, right-hand side.
I know how afraid.
I'm the worst driver in the Midwest.
You're still the one kind of going, oh, all the way over that river,
I know,
into Illinois. Oh, my gosh. It's like taking a day trip.
I get
you
trouble
know?
All the time about I'm that west of 270 person. Like, west of 270?
West of 270. And east of Broadway, you know?
Yeah,
oh, my gosh,
I know.
It's like I always give my book club trouble. I always, because in the beginning when they'd come to our house over, you know, over at the ranch, you know, they'd be like, oh, we're coming over, okay. And everybody would pack water. I'm like, what the heck? You know, you're coming 20 minutes, you know. But they'd all pack a bottle of water just in case, you know.
Yeah.
So I give everybody grief now, you know what I mean? And now it's like everybody slides across that river like there's no problem.
No, yeah. I know. But it's terrible. I mean, I will. I'll put my things on a boat and move continent. I'll move 9,000 miles.
Yeah.
No worries.
No worries.
But it's like, whew, Illinois. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Go over the go over that bridge.
Because I've got no sense of direction whatsoever.
Oh, I know that too. Yes.
I mean, you know. So I'm the quintessential goldfish. So I'm like, I don't know where I'm going. So if I get lost, it can really go pear-shaped. So, but yeah, so I finally learned to drive. And then just absolutely 100% hook, line, and sinker fell completely. St. Louis, Missouri, USA is one of the great loves of my life. This city, I tell ya, there is nowhere else on the planet like it.
But look at how much time you took, you know, as far as finding a great position to come back to come back here.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah. I mean, you could go anywhere, you know, with all your experience, your background, your experience, your resume, you could go anywhere.
I did. I did go anywhere.
You did, yeah.
I mean,
and you still chose to come back here.
I came back. So I left in 2015, and you mentioned I wasn't very well. I had actually had a cancer diagnosis while I was here working, and really felt like once I'd gotten through treatment that I should go back to Australia and be with my family.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel like home anymore. It just didn't feel like home. And then I was raised in Hong Kong, and I had the opportunity to work with EY in Hong Kong. So I went back to Hong Kong for a year, and then got headhunted back to Australia again to a different city. And it was a terrific job. And I was like, maybe I needed a little bit of a easing into Australia again. Maybe it just didn't take the first time because I was still sort of in transition in my life, you know, getting over a major illness. So I went back to Sydney. And again, it just was like, oh, you know what? This is not home.
Mm-hmm.
And the company that I went to work for was supposed to relocate and didn't. So I had this crazy 3-hour commute every day and a lot of time on the road to sort of think about, well, where were you really happiest?
Mm-hmm.
Where is your home? You know, if you could choose anywhere on the planet.
Where is your heart?
Where is that? And and the answer was St. Louis. So, yeah, it took me the better part of 2 years after that sort of, you know, I thought, oh, boy. And I came back at a couple of months after that just for a visit.
Right.
And really got that full body sense of, that lovely feeling that you get when you cross the threshold at night and you put your bag down, that, I'm home.
Yeah.
I had expected to get that when I flew back to Australia after my assignment in St. Louis, and it didn't happen. And it didn't happen right until I came back for a visit, I guess, 2.5-3 years ago now, where I was like, oh, okay.
Well, this I think Mike Moore had you on a horse at that point,
he did,
too.
Yeah,
he did. I think he had you on Sunny at that point. Yeah. I just saw some of those pictures the other day of you out there with Sunny.
Yeah.
Sunny's still alive.
Oh, Sunny.
Sunny's still kicking. I think Sunny. That horse knows how much I can't stand him.
I know.
And I know how much he doesn't like me. That I think that
it was
horse
the biggest
just...
shock of my life, because you're such an animal lover.
I am.
Maureen walked past Sunny on my first ever day at Saddleback and said, hey, Sunny, is today a good day to die?
I
was
like, what? And Mike Moore just is always like, I can't believe you say that about my horse. But that horse.
I'm like, what?
I know, it's terrible. And I am. I'm horrible about that. But he's. That horse, if I was bleeding to death and he was my only mode of transportation to get from our farm, from our stables into a hospital, I would not get on that horse.
I know.
I would not get on him. You know what I mean? And he's now when he's sick, it's great. Like he's had some bouts with different things, you know, laminitis and different things. And I'm the first to go get the vet out here. We got to do whatever we can to save him. When I could say, good, let's put him down.
Yeah.
But no, because I don't want to see him suffer.
No.
But he's almost like almost every man that when they're really sick and they don't feel good, all of a sudden they're just like putty in your hands. And they're like, oh, okay, thank you for the chicken noodle soup. Thank you for everything, you know. And that's kind of when Sonny's the nicest to me, is when he's not feeling good, whether it's intestinal or whatever.
Oh, man.
When that horse is not feeling well, that's when he's the nicest
he's
to me.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh.
But gosh, he's really, and the thing is, he's an escape artist. And when we first had horses and the boys were still little and, you know, Mike and the boys would be at a soccer game or something that maybe Mike was playing in and they were just on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Sonny always could figure out how to get through every gate. And the thing is, I'd be getting calls from neighbors going, Sonny's out in our cornfield, or Sonny's out in this. You know, and the thing is, I was always the one who had to go fetch that horse, you know, and I'd be getting grain. Come on, Sonny, come back here, you know, because I didn't know how to lasso a horse or catch him or do anything. Drove me nuts. And he just had a blast. Till then, all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, I'm smarter than you. I know how to put clips on these gates, and we're going to lock everything every which way. I don't care. Because he's like so smart. But he's got to be every bit of 35 now. He's seen a lot of babies fold on the farm.
Yeah.
You know, he's seen a lot of babies that have been born, that have raced and are now mothers. You know, Coco Bandita, perfect example.
When he finally passes, you will miss him. Like, you will be devastated. You will. I'm calling it now.
Okay, well, you know, go ahead and drop your dime on that one. We'll see.
I will drop my dime on that one.
But I think King Negwar, his bunkmate, is going to be more upset, and Mike will be, because Mike can't even ride him anymore, because it's just not, you know, Sonny. I mean, you know, we can, friends come out and they bring like little 3-year-olds out, yeah, you know, a grandchild or something, and you know Sonny is good to kind of pony around.
Yeah,
but trust me, you couldn't get me on him, because I'd be afraid of what he'd do to me. You know, I would get on one of our racehorses that are still in training and trust them more than I would trust Sonny. What's that tell you? But yeah, I remember when you were back and Mike had you on Sonny. You were having a good old time.
I was having a good old time. I was like, oh, this is just too good to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I came back. I came back. And St. Louis is home.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Welcome back, Kirsty. And you know what? Let's break here. We'll let McDonald's come through probably and say a few things about Arches for Opportunities. And it's called Archways for Opportunities, actually, but it's a great program with McDonald's. And so what I think we'll do is we'll break here and we'll come back with Kirsty McDonald in a few minutes. This is Maureen Moore here on Cocktails and Conversation on 590 The Fan.
We now return to Cocktails and Conversation with Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Maureen Moore here on Cocktails and Conversation on 590 The Fan. You know, our mantra is strong women, may we know them, may we raise them, may we be them. And then, of course, we add, and may we praise them. And, of course, today with this guest is Kirsty McDonald, communications executive, you know, from 3 different continents. I mean, she's worked everywhere from, you know, New York to Asia, to Australia, but she's Scottish born. So, you know, the nice thing is this is a girl from all points on earth. And, but she's got better than 20 years experience in communications and started out in radio. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about our mantra because of the fact that, you know, strong women, may we know them. May we praise them. We're praising you today, dear.
Oh,
you know, so it's Kirsty McDonald here for our final segment. And Kirst, how would you talk about mentoring somebody, you know, teaching, greeting, raising, training, you know, females in this day and age with everything you know now? How would you mentor them, or what would you suggest are some good things to guide them with?
I think there are a couple of things.
Okay.
Maybe 5 or 7 years ago, somebody got me a book called Why Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fantastic. Uh-huh. It's still available on Amazon, and I would recommend it for every mid-career professional. So at that time, there was the Sheryl Sandberg Lean In and, you know, Work Harder, and that had never been a problem for me.
Yeah.
I wish I had, but I didn't have kids. So I was leaning pretty hard, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
I've leaned any harder.
Remember those late nights,
right.
You know?
And so I was leaning, but that book talked about, you know, don't be, use your strongest voice. And if you actually sit in meetings with women, say there are 1 or 2 women and there's a large group of men, sometimes the woman will use a softer tone when she's speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It was subtle things like, you know, use a confident tone. When you're having a conversation in a meeting, be sure to use your most confident tone. Just silly, like what seemed like really obvious and almost condescending points in this book, that you start to actually, I guess, osmose. I was like, well, hang on, am I speaking up enough in meetings? Am I sort of waiting until 3 people give their opinion before I give mine? Are there female traits there that we've been taught that to be nice, you let everyone have their turn first if you're a girl, whereas boys are sort of rewarded more for going for it,
mm-hmm.
you know, be the first
mm-hmm.
one across the line.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas
mm-hmm.
for us, it's like make sure that everyone's happy and comfortable and then you take your turn. So it's a book about quite a lot of that programming and how it hurts you in a workplace setting. And it's not about being mean or aggressive, or it's just about asking for the things that you want or need, or having opinions that are valid, and not being afraid to present them. So it was an amazing book. And I think probably that same time period, 5 or 7 years ago, and I'm not really doing the book justice, there were tips in there about how to conduct yourself in a confident way. And it wasn't really until I read the book that I started to pay attention in a work setting to, well, how many women are there at the table? And by your mid-30s to early 40s, not many. Not as many.
Correct.
When you become an executive.
Well, and there's different things that come into play.
Absolutely.
Some women, they'll, you know, they've worked hard and all of a sudden, you know, 10 years in, they're married and decide, you know what, I can't afford to take a few years off, you know, to raise my family. Yep. And so they choose to do that. You know, not because all of a sudden they've gotten pushed out, but more because, if anything, you know, they're invited in even more often. But at that point, some want to take that time for their families.
Right.
You know, so you're right.
So, I mean, it's not news, and the numbers are there that there aren't so many. I mean, I think I read this week the last Fortune 500 company that didn't have a female on its board finally got one.
Really? Thank goodness.
Yeah, but the last one, finally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
There aren't as many of us at the table. So, but there are early career.
Mm-hmm.
There were more females than males in my journalism class at university, in my on my course. There were more graduates. There were more of us as cadets. There were more of us in early career. It's not until you keep moving into your 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond that the ranks start to thin out a little bit when,
mm-hmm.
you get a little bit higher up the totem pole. And I'm certainly by no means at the very top of the totem pole, but, you know, I'm mid-career now.
Right.
But so what I tried to do, and I got very serious about, okay, what do I wish someone had told me? And lesson number one, it is absolutely okay to be intentional about what you want out of your career.
So lesson number one, being intentional about your career.
Yeah.
You know, explain to people that, you know, you are hoping at some point that you're looking towards the C-suite.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So it is not too early to start thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
At 23, 24,
create that
25.
Path. You've got to create that. You've got to create that map.
Mm-hmm. You can change your mind.
And you don't have to be. You know what I've always hated was, and you know, you hear this term a lot, people that know how to manage up.
Yep.
You know, that a lot of people, when they get into that management level stage or that mid-manager, that especially women, that they're really good at managing up, but they're like rotten to the people below them.
Right.
You know, and you and I have both seen that. You know, we've seen that. And I think, gosh, you know, you know, one of the things women need to remember is you don't have to all of a sudden become a different person or personality and only manage up and kiss everybody's, you know, what, on the way up and be mean to everybody below you or, you know, that's working for you.
I think as a woman, you got three jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You got your day job.
Right.
And then secondly, your other full-time job. And a lot of men that I know, and I don't like to make generalizations, but a lot of men that I know are just innately better at this. Your second job is managing your career. So there's being good at what you do.
Right.
But actually managing your career. And sports professionals have managers to do this for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or actors.
Actors have.
Like you just concentrate
on your craft. Jockeys have their agents. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. someone will figure out how to get you to the Kentucky Derby or whatever
exactly.
it is.
That's
right,
exactly
on the
right.
Horse.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's
mm-hmm.
working that for you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't all get the luxury of that. So your second full-time job is managing your career.
Mm-hmm.
And then your third job is bringing up the women who are a little further behind the curve in their careers. So if you're mid-career, that's the early career professionals. And if you're towards the end of your career, that's the mid-career professionals. So you've got three jobs. You've got what you do every day for your bread and butter. And then you've got the bigger picture. Take a step back once a year or twice a year. Our company gives us a performance review. Well, are you giving your company a performance review? How are they doing at giving you the opportunities that you need? Is it the right culture for you? Is it the right fit for you? Is it making you excited about the world? Is it the company's values? Are those values right for you? This does not always happen, folks. The job market is hopping in America at the moment.
Right.
It's hopping. So if you're somewhere that you feel good about your team and maybe good about what you're doing, but you don't feel like it's really, you're leaping out of bed in the morning, you have the right to look around once or twice a year and say, well, is there a company? And maybe there's a company 2 miles down the road
mm-hmm.
with a job, and maybe you take a lateral move or maybe even a demotion to go and work somewhere that it is work that is, we spend a lot of time at work.
Well, look at that. That's just it.
I mean,
traveling to work, you know,
right.
prepping for work, traveling to work, just even the clothes, yeah. everything else that you have to do, that's all part of work.
Yep.
And that encompasses your life. You, gosh darn it, you need to be happy.
Yeah.
You need to feel that you're moving, you know, at least you're moving in a positive manner.
Right. So for my reports in the last few years, male, female, whomever, but women in particular, I'm very intentional about asking, what do you want out of your career and how far do you want to go? And I've never asked that question and had an immediate response. People are always a little bit thunderstruck to be asked that question. Like, well, I don't know. I was like, well, go on. You don't have to know right now, but go away and have a think about it and come back and you tell me and we'll try and give you those opportunities to get you there, because it's my job to get you there. If I'm your leader,
that's exactly it.
That is my job to get you there. It's your job to show me that you can get there, but it's my job to lay that those pavers so that you can begin on that path. I've done my job if you are promoted out of or find a job doing or go on to something better and someone else comes up behind you and you move on, then I'll be so sad. But that's my job, is for you to eventually be in my job.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, I used to always think I wanted everybody that worked for me, I wanted them to be able to flourish. I wanted them to be able to be successful. And the best thing was when they'd get plucked from me
right. And
get moved on, you know, or get another or get a promotion or get moved into a different department. That was always such a moment of pride for me, because
oh, yeah.
it meant that I prepared them, that I taught them well, and that they were ready to move on.
You had Cabinie Howard on this show?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I had Cabinie on here, yeah. I had Kirsty Bertelsmann on here.
Right. Cabinie yeah. worked for me mm-hmm. at Peabody, and I yeah. knew from day one that she was passing through.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
now she's the CEO of her own company, and that was always going to happen. You know, so you are grateful to be part of people's journey.
Oh, yeah.
But... you know, I'm very serious about, and you see this as well when men and women apply for the same job. And once you do get to mid-career, you take those applications and there's always that line that says, you know, what's your expected salary range?
Right.
The women, in my experience,
what do
always
they do?
10% less.
Really?
10 to 15% less. With commensurate experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the men will think, you know what, I'm going to ask for a little more than I want. And we'll see, you know, we'll see if it sticks.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And again, the women,
this is generalization. And women will be sort of like, well, you know, I hope I'm not asking for too much here. Like, I really want this job. I hope I'm not. It's this. But the gap from my experience, sincerely,
yeah.
And it's anecdotal, this is just me, there's about 10% there. And it's like, well, you know, ask for something that you're going to be comfortable with in 2 years' time.
That's exactly right.
If you're getting that 2% a year, what if this is the kind of job where you're going to have to pull long hours or you're going to have to travel? Be comfortable, know your worth. And it's okay to step back and say, well, actually, I've got 5 or 7 years experience now. I think I'm worth this.
Well, and I like to tell people, you know, sometimes, you know, take the time to review and kind of look at the company or the, you know, what the job is or what the description is or what is the normal performance expectation, you know, and look at the finances for that company. Sometimes, you know, companies are very willing to say, we can meet this salary requirement, but ask them for, I need 2 extra weeks vacation.
Right.
Or I need time at Christmas. So that, because, I need time at Christmas, I need to take 2 weeks off. I'll take one without pay and one with pay, but I need 2 weeks solid time off at Christmas. You know, something that the company will be glad to give you, because time sometimes doesn't cost them as much.
Right.
Because they know, of course, first thing is you're going to come back. You're still going to get your work done.
Right.
You know, and you're still
on
salary.
You're logging on
so
while you're away.
You're still logging on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the whole thing. I don't travel anywhere, and I haven't all the years I've worked for everyone.
Yeah.
And even now with my own company, with Saddleback Chocolates, you know, you're always working, for crying out loud, the
yeah.
way it is now compared
yeah.
to what it was 30 years ago.
Yep.
I think that's really important information, that, you know, advice that you're giving to young women, because, you know, take care of yourself and take care of yourself first.
Yep.
That's not being stingy. That's not being greedy.
Men seem to be really good at having some kind of activity where they play basketball or they get
playing
together.
Playing golf,
or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
They kind of keep that up. Power mm-hmm. to them, and God love them. You know, I have a partner with this amazing friendship group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's vital and it's wonderful. And that support network is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And women between work and child rearing, there's definitely, I think, a period in midlife where you kind of lose that. At exactly the time that you need to sit around a table, when you feel like, oh my God, this is all just very hard. And I don't know how anyone else does adulthood. Like, I'm the one who just doesn't get the memo, and I'm the one who doesn't know how to hold it all together. Nobody does. But it's exactly at the time when everyone is feeling that way that we all fall away because we're so busy. And your
Thank
best
God.
Friend from college is going through exactly the same thing.
Exactly.
If you have lunch, they're like, oh my God. And you're like, oh, but I just saw you on Facebook and Instagram, and you looked like you had sort of, you know, 2.4 perfect children and this amazing career, and you just took this. And it's like, oh my God, no. Are you kidding me? I'm up till 3 o'clock in the morning at the moment just trying to get this project across the line.
And that's how I was, yeah. I mean, I was doing stuff till, you know, all hours of the night. And I think I'd be making roasts, you know, at midnight, so at least that we had, you know, rump roast the next day for dinner.
Right.
But, you know, the funny thing is book clubs, I think, have come into great play to keep women together, keep women so at least they have, you know, once a month. My book club is just a saving grace, and we all feel that we just adore it, and we're all there for each other all the time, no matter what. You know, then I have a few friends that we do the Muni, you know, we it's every Wednesday night, the Muni, and it's the same four, and it's wonderful. Yeah. And then, you know, we said, you know what, we've got to start doing the Fox the same way, because those are wonderful nights for women to be able to have some time.
These incredible,
again, coming back to St. Louis having this world of art and history and entertainment.
Go gone at the moment at Slam.
I know.
Mean, literally.
Yeah.
I love that about this city. The world comes to you.
Kathy Federico, we're walking out of the Muni the other night because Kathy's one of them for the Muni. And Kathy goes, I want to go. I said, I'm in on that one, babe. I'm in on that one. I said, you know, it's perfect. You know,
it's amazing.
You know, but you got the science, you know, you got the art, you've got our library that's just phenomenal here. You know, so you've got it. People, you know, most people, especially at our age, we take advantage of that and really spend time, you know, and that I think gives us our sanity.
Yeah.
You know, so young working women, it's a matter of balance.
Yep.
It's a matter of taking care of. Find your tribe. That's exactly right.
Find your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of balance. And also, it's absolutely okay to be intentional. Like, take that time at the end of the year when you're getting your end of year review. You review them too. You review your company. Do I feel like I'm getting the opportunities that I need? Am I asking for them? Because your boss might be thinking that you're completely satisfied or doesn't want to overload you. Meanwhile, you're sitting at your desk thinking, oh God, I wish I were working on that project. They won't know unless you speak up. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want, and ask politely, and you can be told no, and that's completely fine. But if you don't ask, nobody's going to know.
Speak up and step up.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and these are some words of wisdom, some pearls of wisdom. And I hate to say, gosh, our hour's already gone, Kirst. I've got to have you come back because there's so many things we still got to talk about. But, you know, today has just been exhilarating because of the fact that we've been able to really kind of mine, and no pun intended, because of your years with Peabody Energy.
There you go,
but we're kind of mining into your education and into your knowledge. So I want to just say thank you to my dear friend, Kirstie McDonald, for coming by today.
It's been a joy.
You know, a communications executive. She's not just a communications executive. She is the queen of communications.
Oh, please.
She gets it right. She pushes. She checks all sides of her stories. And she has been just a wonderful guest today. So thank you very much. Strong women, may we know them, may we raise them, may we be them. And Kirstie McDonald, may we praise them. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. This has been a joy.
This is wonderful. Cocktails and Conversation, this is Maureen Moore. Until next week, 590 The Fan. Thanks so much.